I want you to notice a few things. In Matthew's vision of the final judgment, salvation does not come because someone accepted Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. It doesn't come through faith in God. It doesn't say that we're saved by grace. It doesn't come because of confession and forgiveness of sins. In Matthew's version, salvation comes through acts of loving kindness, through caring for those in need. And both the groups, the goats and the sheep in this story, were kind of surprised to hear this. They were surprised to hear this version of the final judgment. The goats didn't respond to the suffering of others, and it doesn't tell us why. Maybe simply they didn't see it because they were so wrapped up in their own lives, or because they were so wrapped up in their own pain, or because of their own struggles. Maybe they were just self-absorbed. And the sheep, the ones that had responded to the needs of others, had not seen the profound value in what they were doing. They had not seen that they were, in fact, responding to Christ. So through this lesson, Matthew is asking us to open our eyes and to see a spiritual truth. Open our eyes and see that it is in the needy, the hungry, the vulnerable, that Christ lives. It is there that we will encounter the divine. It is in opening ourselves to the suffering of the world that we will find salvation. Salvation, that's kind of a funny word, isn't it? What exactly do we mean by salvation? When we speak of being saved, what do we mean? I ask myself that question. And I ask myself, well, saved from what? From hell? I don't know if I even believe in hell, at least not in the sense of eternal damnation. But for me, anyway, salvation has more a sense of being saved, honestly, from myself, from my own egoism, from my own, the misery, and it is misery, of self-absorption. I looked up in the UCC Statement of Faith, and it speaks one line that I really love. It says, God seeks in holy love to save all people from aimlessness and sin. I'm going to repeat that. God seeks in holy love to save all people from aimlessness and sin. We are saved from aimlessness and sin when we reach out in love and truly encounter the other. And in that encounter, we are changed. I want to share a story with you about a friend of mine named Peter. His nickname is actually Mr. Habitat because he does so much work for Habitat for Humanity. It's his passion, his avocation. When I first met Peter, we got to know each other, and he told me the story of his life. And the way he described his upbringing is he told me that he was raised poor. And one of the stories he shared with me is when he was in elementary school and one of his schoolmates invited him to a party and he couldn't go because he did not have appropriate clothing. And his parents couldn't afford to buy him appropriate clothing and he couldn't go. He worked hard, got good grades in school, worked his way through college, got scholarships, all of that. Got into the corporate world, worked his way up in the corporate ladder. He was an executive when I met him, middle management. He had done very well financially, had the big house, the nice car, all the fancy schmancy vacations. And honestly, when you talk to him, he honestly said that poverty was really a result of laziness. He said, you know, poor people are just lazy and unmotivated. He said, I worked my way up. Other people can do it. He joined a church. He got involved. And at one of the missions that the church did is they did a work project for Habitat for Humanity. And he went to that and helped build a house. And then he did a couple of others. And as he got involved, the powers that be in Habitat noticed his managerial skills and his ability and asked him to serve on the board of directors. So he did. And part of his job was to interview people that were applying for houses. And so he got to do that. He began to interview and really talk to these people. And something changed in him. A lot changed. As he encountered the working poor, he realized, these people are poor in a way I was never poor. He realized, as he listened to his story, their stories, he realized it was very, very different from his story. And when he thought about it, he realized, you know, maybe I didn't have clothes that I could wear to a country club, but my parents always made sure I had shoes and pants and shirts and a jacket that was warm. Maybe I didn't have dress shoes, but I had sneakers and they fit, and I had socks to go with them, and I had a place to sleep. I was never expected or forced to sleep outdoors. I was never expected to sleep on a couch. I was never expected to work for minimum wage at a menial job to earn the food to eat. My parents expected me to go to school and to get good grades. They did not expect me to earn my own money when I was a child. He realized, my story's very wrong. I was not raised poor. I was working class. And happened to live in a neighborhood close to a very affluent neighborhood. And a lot of my schoolmates were wealthy and affluent. And my parents were working class. But I was not poor. This is a completely different world that he was now encountering through his work with Habitat for Humanity. And it changed his perspective, and his heart began to open with compassion. And he grew to have genuine respect for these people who had faced so much more challenge than he had ever faced in his life. And his heart opened in love. And so I ask you, what is the Christ Spirit? If it isn't compassion, respect, love. In a very real way, Peter encountered Christ in the working poor. Yes, his endless hours of volunteer work helped hundreds and hundreds of people, but it transformed his soul. He was utterly changed through it. I have a lot of friends, as I'm sure we all do, that are very successful financially and have done well in life, you know. And I'm troubled because some of them that I talk to need 3 martinis just to get through the evening because it's so boring and empty. And I think about Peter and I realized, I mean, Peter likes wine. That's one of his habits, one of his hobbies. He likes to taste it, learn about it, study how it's made, buy it, give it away as gifts. He enjoys that, but he does not need 3 martinis to get through the evening. His life is anything but empty. His evenings are filled, poring over spreadsheets for Habitat for Humanity, scouring the internet for vacant lots or teardowns for that next project, reading the applications from the folks that need housing. His life is full. He's been saved from aimlessness and sin. I have another friend named Dan. that was actually one of my parishioners in a church that I served in Pennsylvania. We did a confirmation program that year, and each one of the confirmation students was assigned to a mentor, and Dan mentored one of the teenage boys. And one of the activities they did in this confirmation process was they were supposed to do a service project. So their service project is they went and worked a couple of Saturdays at a soup kitchen, serving food to people that needed it. And the student, you know, learned what he did during the confirmation and was confirmed and moved on and went to college and all of that. But Dan went back to that soup kitchen the next Saturday and the Saturday after that and the Saturday after that. Now, at that time when I was working as the minister in that church, he was having some struggles at work. He was a regional sales manager for a company. For him, it was a very, very good job. He oversaw sales in a whole section of the state, things like that. But he was having some conflicts with his boss, who he felt was asking him to do some things that weren't exactly ethical. And they were sort of in conflict about that. Well, for lots of reasons, I left that church, came back to California. About a year and a half later, I went back and was able to have lunch with him. And I learned two things. One is that he was still working at the soup kitchen, year and a half later, every single Saturday. And the other was that, sure enough, he had gotten fired from his job. He wasn't able to find another equivalent job. The only job he could find after months of unemployment was driving a delivery truck for a grocery store. It was manual labor. He was making about half of what he had made before. And yet, when I sat and talked to him, I did not hear one note of regret or bitterness or sadness. All he said is, "I am so glad I did not lose my house. I am so grateful that I have a job and I can still feed my family. I can still provide for my children." All I heard was gratitude and generosity. And I know why. Because of that soup kitchen. Because every week he was going and encountering people whose stories were even harder than his own. And he truly was living a life of gratitude and generosity. He encountered Christ at that soup kitchen. In the months ahead, I'm looking forward to hearing all of your stories because I know how much you have all given in different situations. And I want to hear and learn about how serving others has changed and transformed you. In a minute, we're going to sing that wonderful classic song, Amazing Grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. And when I hear that song, I think of all the different ways we can somehow get lost. It's different for each one of us. Peter got lost for a little while in his hard-earned success. Dan could easily have gotten lost in his quote-unquote professional failure, although I very much see that as a moral victory. But it could have been seen as professional failure. But both were saved through service to others, their work with people in need. In closing, I would like to share with you a piece written by Mother Teresa in which she reflects on the challenges and the joys of serving others. It's entitled, "Do It Anyway." People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people will accuse you of being selfish and having ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. If you spend years building, someone could destroy it overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you have anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. And now I invite you to be in a moment of silent reflection. And then, if you are comfortable, in a moment we will read together a litany of belief as printed in your order of worship. Let us be in silence.